Today is April 2nd, 2014, and this is episode number 248 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a man who made at least one mistake in his presentation at Macworld. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
At least one. How about if we go with only one?
No, I'm sure there were more than one, but I was only given the top of the list.
Well, okay. Fair enough. And I heard that your presentation went well, so go you.
It did. It was fun. I got some really smart people. It's nice. All right. So when you're doing a talk about something as potentially technical as Bitcoins, it's really awesome when you're not the smartest guy in the room, when the people who are smarter than you also happen to be pretty nice and pretty cool.
That helps a lot.
It really does. Because you twist any one of those parameters, and flip them from zero to one, and it can become a little bit. It could be ugly.
It could be very ugly.
It could be very ugly. So now we did do Macworld last week. You did two sessions. I did a session and a meetup. We met with lots of vendors. It was a good show.
It was a really good show. I had a lot of fun.
I did too.
Yeah, it was cool. I just love that it's like a big family reunion every year.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, and one of the things that's missing from Macworld today is that you don't have a lot of mainstream press show up, and that definitely. It would be nice to have some of that mainstream press there covering some of the new products that are being announced. But the reality is that the reason why they used to come was because of Apple.
Right. Once Apple was gone, for mainstream media outlets, there wasn't the perceived value in showing up.
Yeah. And it's too bad, but it definitely adds to the familial aspect of the show that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, lots of hugs in the press room.
Yes.
Lots of hugs in the speaker room.
Yes.
And, lots of smiling faces. So the show, they did a really good job. One of the things that I liked about this year's show is they had a main stage and a second stage that were on the expo floor.
Mm-hmm.
And they were set on opposite ends past the, obviously the last row of vendors on either side of the show. And it gave them extra exposure because there were lots of people that would go to the stages to see the various presentations and performances and interviews and all the other things that were going on.
And it was also nice because it meant that when you're on those stages, the people that were there to hear you speak had a better chance of actually hearing you, because if they were in the middle of the expo floor, the noise would just be too crazy.
Yeah. And it was definitely a good setup for everybody concerned. And what has been true for the last several years of Macworld, what's now called Macworld iWorld, is that there are lots of folks. Each booth has got lots of folks crowded around it talking to people. It's not packed the same way it used to be packed in terms of, you can barely get through the floor itself, but all of the vendors had tons of people and everybody's smiling and having a good time.
Yeah. And that was cool. And the smiling and good time, I saw that happening on Thursday, which is the first day the expo floor was open, all the way through Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something you don't see at CES. I mean, they're different shows. But no one has a good time at CES.
No. Okay, so while I don't have a good time at CES, I also have a good time at CES.
Huh.
I I enjoy, okay, what I enjoy at CES is that there are a lot of people that I know that will be there, and it's fun to get to hang out with those people. Well, and like, you're there, I'm there, and Dave is there. And that's always fun when we get to hang out. I really enjoy that.
Well, that's nice and all. That's great. I mean, it is good. And being able to have, there's so much great food in Vegas, and it's frankly easier to get at that great food in Vegas during CES than it is to get at all the great food in San Francisco during Macworld, because the great food in Macworld is a lot less centralized. And it's, massively spread out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not like, boo-hoo, woe is me that I have to go to CES. I mean, that's ridiculous. But Macworld is just such a, it's so much more fun. And I thought
it's a lot friendlier, too.
Way friendlier. And the sessions, of course, Macworld is a consumer show. And CES is not. CES is not even open to the public. So, there are all kinds of differences between the show in the first place. But the sessions this year I thought were really interesting, really good. You did a session on wearable tech and fitness tech.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw the fitness tech one. We were both speaking at the same time during your wearable one.
We were. So I was bummed I didn't get to come see you speak.
Oh, well, thank you. I was not bummed that I got to see you speak at the fitness one.
You showed up after the technical issues had been resolved. I did the whole first part of my session without the projector working, which is fine. And the tech people that were there, they totally rocked because they were just going way out of their way to get all that stuff fixed. But
well, and I actually had a few minutes without we ended up passing each other in the hall, the tech guy and me. So I had to start mine also without a screen. But that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Because it all worked out, and it was a good time.
It was a good time. And my session was on managing and mining Bitcoins on your Mac, and then we had that meetup too. And then I was also was on the main stage with the rest of the Macworld All-Star Band, being interviewed by Chris Breen, who is also in the Macworld All-Star Band, about how we got our start in the Macworld and how we got our start with the band and a little bit of the history of the band. I think it was called the Macworld All-Star Band Confidential is what it was called. But that was a lot of fun.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it really is. And then we had the party.
And that was fantastic. It was the best one yet.
It was my own little confidential here. It was the first time I've had fun on this. First time I've let myself have fun on the stage.
I'm glad you did because that rocks. When you're having fun, everyone else is too.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Now, see, I've been there. I've been at the at Cirque du Mac for many, many years.
Well, since the first one.
And I missed the very first one.
The first Cirque du Mac party, you weren't with us yet?
Nope, I wasn't.
Oh.
And here's the funny thing. I had a ticket to go to the first Cirque du Mac.
You weren't working for us yet?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, huh.
And, so I had my ticket, and I was ready to go.
We hear your phone blowing up, by the way.
Oh, my phone is blowing up. Sorry about that. Hey, good news. There's a package waiting for me.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So I actually ended up giving away my ticket to someone that this was the only year that they were going to be able to ever go to Macworld. And they didn't have a ticket. There's no way they could go.
You should have come up and said, hey Brian, I think I'm going to work for you next year. Can I get another ticket?
And you would have given me a ticket and a big hug. Okay, I would have given you the big hug, just long enough so it felt a little bit awkward.
Well, nonetheless, it was definitely a good party. We had a great crowd. Bam is on fire. The entertainers were great. Our trapeze artist was fantastic, and we had the henna tattoo folks that were there. We had face painting that was there again. We had a guy doing iPad sketches, little caricatures.
Those were so cool.
Those were so cool. I was so bummed that I couldn't get one myself.
I was so very, very bummed.
I didn't have time because
I didn't have time either. The line was really long, and yeah. I did, however, for the very first time, indulge in the henna tattoo thing. And I did exactly the wrong thing, and I let people pick what the tattoo should be.
and you let one of those people be our friend Caroline.
Yes, I did.
That was a mistake.
Yes. So I ended up with a zombie Hello Kitty chewing on an arm.
It's just fantastic.
Yeah. Luckily, henna tattoos don't last long.
It's true. Although, in the early years of Cirque, the first time that we brought the henna folks in, it was fantastic walking around the show floor the next day and spotting the people working the booths who didn't know that henna doesn't wash off.
That was awesome.
People have learned their lesson since then. You don't see a lot of the henna the next day on the show floor anymore. But that was so much. Oh, that's me at probably close to my most wicked. It's enjoying all the people who were just covered with henna designs on their face, trying to have a straight conversation with a mackerel attendee.
Yeah, and there's nothing they can do because, I mean, it's just there.
It's just there. It's going to be there for, I don't know, a little less than a week.
Yeah.
It'll start fading out the next day, but, you know, it's going to take several days to go away. Then we also had some face painting, which does wash off. And my favorite was a PR person named Rachel.
I know exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Hers was awesome.
It was really, really cool. Yeah. Really, really cool. But yeah, so Macworld was good. The vendors were good. You know, we gave away some Editor's Choice Awards.
We did. And
let's tell our listeners about that.
Okay, so for those of you that don't know what Editor's Choice Awards are, they're exactly what they sound like. The stuff that we found that we thought was awesome, so awesome that it deserved special recognition.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. And I'm actually clicking through to the announcement so I can make sure that we don't miss anybody. My personal favorite device absolutely and positively had to be the FLIR 1.
The FLIR 1 was really, really cool. I want one just so I can see how hot things are. I want to walk around and measure temperatures. Which, okay, so what the FLIR 1 is a camera attachment for your iPhone 5 or 5S that does thermal imaging.
Does thermal imaging. And a FLIR standalone camera tends to start at about $1,000. Now, FLIR is the name of the company, right? And I forget what it stands for, but I think the IR in FLIR is, it's FLIR, and I think the IR is is infrared, obviously. I forget what the FL that I can never remember what it actually stands for. But
well, what I'm coming up with is not what it is, and I can't say.
Fair enough.
Family show.
Moving on. The if you have seen, if you watch, my first big exposure to FLIR cameras were, and this is kind of a confession, would be the various ghost hunting shows that are out there, because the paranormal community loves using infrared cameras because many people believe that they can spot energies or, you know, ghosts, as it were, based on temperature differentials. And FLIR is the camera that's used in these shows all the time. But like I said, the handheld, the standalone versions of these phones, of these cameras, started at about $1,000.
Right. And this is $350, and it gives you higher resolution. I was amazed when they were holding the camera, like at a television screen, you could see all the hot spots and cool spots on the television screen. But when text came across, there was enough resolution, you could actually read the text.
Huh. I did not realize that. I don't actually think it's higher resolution, though. Do you know that it's higher resolution?
Well, if it's not higher resolution, it's doing something that creates the appearance of higher resolution, because it's giving you better definition. Right. And like you can clearly see the edges of objects. It's not that kind of, I'll call it fuzzy look that you get.
Right.
I mean, you can clearly pick out objects.
Right. So I love, so in our picture in the Editor's Choice Award article, it's you and the FLIR representative standing there with the banner, and then Kelly Gaumont has her arm floating in the image, actually holding the FLIR one in action, looking at you two. I think that's funny. And the original article I did when we just posted about the product, I've got Bob Levitis, I've got a picture of, I guess, am I holding? No, I guess maybe it's, anyway, it's a picture of the FLIR one looking at Bob, and it very clearly looks like Bob to me, but I said in the article, it's like, oh, in this picture is Bob. He's hot. I'm easily amused, but that tickled me pink. So anyway, it's cool. $350 because it's using your iPhone to do a lot of the heavy lifting, a lot of the storage, and you know, it's using an iPhone app to control the camera, so that's how they're able to make it cheaper. And it's really, really cool. And this isn't, by the way, this isn't a device that fits over your iPhone's camera. It's a case that has the full FLIR camera built into it.
Right, and it has its own battery, so it's not going to drain your iPhone battery.
Right, right. It uses your iPhone for storage, but it uses its own battery to film with, and I think they said the battery lasts for, you can film for up to 2 hours straight with it.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and this is not just for, like, you know, amateur paranormal investigators. Like, they talk about, like, using it to find leaks in your house.
Right. Or if you're a housing contractor, you can go in and figure out where the walls have to come out so you can re-insulate, or which windows are a problem.
Yeah. Or if you have a nail in your, or, you know, your tire got a hole in it, but the nail's gone, you can't find it. Well, you can use the FLIR camera to actually see where the temperature differential between the air that's being forced out of the tire will be visible through the FLIR camera. So you can find the hole in your tire. I mean, that's handy. It's not something you need all the time, but that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All kinds of practical uses for this thing. And I think it's really cool. And it's just it's a great way to bring the price down.
Yeah. Yes. It's really cool.
All right, so we've been fanboys enough on that. We gave an award to Hydra 2.
Yes, and actually, okay, so we're recording on Wednesday.
Yep.
The app, we saw it last week for the Mac. It actually shipped today, so people can get it right now.
Is it on the Mac App Store?
It's on the Mac App Store for $10. And it lets you selectively encrypt and hide files instead of doing like File Vault does, where it encrypts your entire hard drive.
Yeah, and you just do it. It's real easy. You just drop a file into Hydra 2, and boom, it's encrypted, and it erases the original version for you. And giddy up, you're good to go.
And I love the way you say Hydra, because it almost sounds like Hydra. And so I'm picturing Captain America having to come in and fight and save us all. Yeah,
fair enough. Fair enough.
Say so, it know, again. Yeah,
encryption. Hyder.
You're not saying it the same now, but that's okay.
Hyder 2. Hyder. I don't. Am I Hydra? Hyder? Nonetheless. Hyder 2. Hyder 2. It's available. It's $10. That's on sale, isn't it? Because they announced it at $20.
Right.
Okay, so it's on sale for $10. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, 10.8 and higher for the version of Mac OS 10 you need to be running.
Yeah. Yeah, easy encryption. Easy encryption. Put your legal documents in there. Put anything else that you don't need anyone to see. And it's not findable by Spotlight. only findable within the Hyder app itself.
Right. So
good stuff.
So not only is it encrypted, it is hidden.
Yep. Hidden. Hidden and encrypted. Scan Snap.
Holy crap, this scanner is cool.
Yeah, it's a scanner. It's a pretty small footprint. Very, very small footprint because it sits above what you want to scan, and you just put what you want to scan underneath it, and then it's got a movable laser in it. And so it ends up being a really, really, really small footprint. And it does things like, I guess they've done this for a while, but if you're scanning a book, for instance, they've got an algorithm that will account for the bend in the pages at the spine.
I don't think you're doing this justice.
Okay.
Okay.
Do it justice.
So this scanner looks more like a high-tech desk lamp. So there's no bed to the scanner. There's no lid to lay down. It's just a small footprint thing that's...
No glass.
Yep. Sits up about 12, 14 inches?
Yep.
And you lay your document in front of this thing on the desk, and then it just does its light and laser magic and scans everything real quick, and it does real high resolution. It can do full color. It can do black and white. It does OCR. Well, the software that comes with it does OCR, and it's just a really cool design because the only desk space you really need is the space to put whatever it is you're going to scan, and then when you're done, you have that desk space back again.
Yeah, it is a really, really small footprint.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Very, very cool. Whoosh 3D, genius little product.
Yes. Okay, so I loved this because, I'm not a big fan of 3D movies. Mm-mm. But the idea that I can actually watch 3D movies or take 2D movies and make them appear 3D, or take movies with my iPhone's built-in camera and make them 3D is really cool.
In my day, movies only needed two dimensions.
Well, get off my lawn. No, wait, you're supposed to tell me to get off your lawn. Oh, I get so confused by that. So the way their software works, you just take a video like you normally would, and it looks like a regular 2D video, but it also, with a single lens, can create 3D video. So it includes a special polarized screen protector that you just put on your iPhone or your iPad. And then you are looking through that at your screen. Anything that's not 3D, which would be pretty much everything else on your iPhone, looks just as it always has. But now when you're watching movies, you get a slider and you can control the 3D depth. Mm. And you can take stuff like videos you're watching on YouTube and tell it, make this 3D. And your iPhone has enough processing power that it can figure that out on the fly and take a 3D movie or 2D movie and convert it to 3D for you.
Now, you know that one of my character flaws is that I like things being as they're supposed to be.
Yes.
Right. It's one of my quirks. I'm not a fan at all. I don't mind 3D movies by any stretch of imagination, but I'm not a fan of taking a movie that was, or a video for goodness sake, that was designed to be 2D and then artificially 3D-ifying it, because there are things you do to make a proper 3D movie that weren't done for a 2D movie.
True. Okay, picture this. You are at a I see what I did there. Yeah. You're at a family gathering, and like I'm at some event, and the nieces are there, and so they want to do some little fun dance or skit thing where they're going to be sticking their arms way out in front of themselves, and I record all this on my iPhone.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a perfect opportunity to use 3D.
Fair enough.
And I can do all of it with a single lens right on my iPhone.
Right. And more importantly, though, you can view if you have a 3D movie file, it will give you 3D without wearing glasses.
Yes.
Yes. This isn't just for making for making your own videos. It's not just for viewing 2D movies. I mean, it'll actually handle 3D movie files.
And you don't need to wear red blue lenses.
Right.
Trivia. I have a pair of red blue lens glasses sitting on my desk all the time.
I know you do.
Yeah.
That's how you roll.
That's how I roll.
Now, the folks at Busy Contacts who made a Busy Cal, which is a very, very popular iCal alternative.
Actually, it's Busy Mac.
Busy, good Lord.
That made Busy Cal.
Thank you.
And you totally spoiled the reveal, which is
I did. Busy Contact. Okay, well, let's just... So, the folks at Busy Mac,
yes,
who make Busy Cal...
Mm-hmm.
Showed off Busy Contacts.
Which is awesome because now we have an app that for the Mac that gives us the powerful contact management that we've always wanted with tight integration into Busy Cal.
Right. And Busy Cal is a very, very popular iCal alternative.
And if you're old school enough to remember the powerhouse of Now Contact, Now Up to Date.
Yep.
That's pretty much what we have again with Busy Cal and Busy Contacts.
Well, it's one of the same guys.
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, no coincidence there. So yeah, Busy Contacts integrates, it's using your Mac's built-in calendar and contacts database, right? So it's not like you're having to separate yourself from the Apple universe, but it's tapping into those things with its own interface and much, much improved features.
That's just a beautiful string of words you put together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Yeah, so they were showing it off. It's going to ship later this year. Pretty darn cool.
I'm excited to see that rollout.
Mm. Yeah, me too. And then the last thing we did, we gave an award to, was Bear Extender Turbo, which is a way of getting 802.11ac, the current newest, baddest version of Wi-Fi, through your Mac's USB port.
That's really cool. So that means that you can get the faster airport speeds on a Mac that you can't otherwise get the faster Wi-Fi.
Right. Now, it supports the fastest speeds through USB 3 because of the limitations of USB. USB 2, you're going to be limited to 480 megabits per second, but the reality is that's still pretty darn fast for Wi-Fi.
Yes. Yes, it is. So that's very cool. And it doesn't require you hacking open your computer, doing any right. weird stuff. You just plug in this USB port, this little dongle thing that has antennas sticking off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And away you go.
And away you go. Yeah. So, you know, if you've got a Mac that doesn't have that AC support in it, which happens to be most Mac users, this is definitely a way of being able to get on those networks, get those speeds without having to buy a new Mac. So that's super cool. Probably the nerdiest of the devices and products that we gave an award to, but definitely cool.
Definitely cool.
Definitely, yeah. Uh-oh. Definitely cool. All right, so anyway, that was my Macworld. It was a good time. Can't wait for next year's show.
Yeah, I'm really excited for next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Me too. I like what the show is becoming. I really like the feel of the show.
Yeah, it's really cool. The dates were announced. I believe yep. next year it's March 12th through 14th.
Yeah, a little bit earlier in the month. It was the end of March this year, obviously.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So separated from CES, that's a good thing. That's good. It's gonna be good. It is going to be good. All right, so let us move on to Apple v. Samsung.
Oh, man. My response isn't because we have to talk about Apple v. Samsung again. It's just that, holy crap, this is like the never-ending story of patent litigation.
It is, and that's because Samsung feels like they're entitled to copy whatever it is they want to copy. All they have to do to end this is to stop copying Apple's patented technology. That's all they have to do. That's all they have to do. Stop copying, and the litigation goes away.
Well, wouldn't that be awesome?
That would, in fact, be awesome. So what we have here, there are three main trials in the U.S. There's the first one that Judge Koh saw.
Yes, that's the one where Apple initially
oversaw.
Won over $1 billion in damages, and then that was later changed to something over $900 million.
In $900 million and change. Mm-hmm. There's the new trial, which is also under Judge Koh,
and it
which involves different products and actually some of the same products, but different patents. And then there's the third trial that is still in the preliminary stages under Magistrate Judge Gruhl. I forget Judge Gruhl's first name.
Robert.
It doesn't matter.
As of now, so, it's Robert. I hope he likes the name.
Yeah. So I mean, and the reason why I specify all this is because we've actually referred to. I know that at TMO we referred to Judge Gruhl's case as the second trial a couple of times.
Well, because at the time it was the second trial.
Right, and it just happens to be that this new trial has gone to court, has gone to trial faster. Judge Koh is overseeing it. It involves several utility patents. Samsung is countersuing for infringement over two patents that they will lose yet again. And so far, so what happened? The jury selection was over the weekend, and the testimony began on Tuesday or Monday.
Jury selection was on Monday.
You're right.
Opening arguments started on Tuesday.
Tuesday. You're totally correct. And I know that on Monday we had on Sunday there was an argument where Samsung didn't like the jury instructional video. Did you see that story?
No, I missed that one.
So juries and patent trials get shown a video that is essentially, this is what a patent is, this is how the patent system works, this is what patent protection is supposed to do, that sort of stuff. And it's produced by the Federal Judicial Center. And I, off the top of my head, I don't know if this is actually a federal organization. I know that the guy who's currently heading this FTC or FJC is a judge. And in any event, they make this video, they explain all this stuff, and there's a new version of the video which happens to feature some Apple products.
Okay.
And Samsung argued that this was prejudicial, that Apple was being shown in an innovative light, and that they didn't, you know, that it wouldn't allow them to get a fair trial. And so they wanted the previous version, the same version, by the way, that was shown in the other trial. So, you know, didn't help them all that much, but whatever. They wanted the previous version of the video shown instead. And on Sunday, Judge Koh ruled that the new one stays in place. Now, I watched the 17-minute video because that's how I roll. And it doesn't show any Apple products in an innovative light. What it shows is some people working on an Apple laptop just as they are working on other devices.
Okay.
So it doesn't say, and this is a MacBook Pro, an example of a highly innovative product. Doesn't say anything like that.
It's
like, you know, dudes who are supposed to be either filing a patent or working on a patent or examining patent documents who happen to have a MacBook, but you definitely see the Apple logo. I don't blame Samsung for wanting it not used if they could get it not used, but it's not going
to
matter.
Sure. You know, that's like in the first trial where Apple wanted to have the Samsung logo covered on all the televisions that were in the courtroom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's along the same lines.
It's exactly along the same lines. And they didn't get that done either.
No, they did.
Oh, they did? Oh, oops.
So
far we've got opening statements from the attorneys pretty much follow the previous trial. Where Apple says, Apple specified this time around that copying the iPhone was part of Samsung's development process for their own post-iPhone smartphones. Did you follow that?
Mostly.
And so they basically just said that they made this case pretty successful. They showed in the last trial that Samsung executives specifically said, we have to make our devices more like the iPhone if we're going to sell them. And, you know, this is an argument that Apple has already won once. And so they're following pretty much the same track record or the same flight plan. And they argued that copying is basically part of Samsung's DNA. And Samsung said, well, you know, none of this is our fault. We get our software from Google. Because this isn't about the look and feel of the devices. This is about utility patents. Right? So the fact that Samsung made stuff that looked like Apple's devices is not on trial.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So Samsung says, well, this isn't our fault. We get our software from Google. Of course, the reality is that a lot of the things that Apple is suing over were things that Google left out of Android because they knew that it was patented. And Samsung and the other OEMs added that functionality in anyway on top of Google's Android. But their attorneys are trying to argue that, well, you know, we get all our stuff from Google. So this is, you know, if you have a beef, take it up with Google is what they're arguing. It's going to be a failed strategy, I assume.
I'm assuming it'll be a failed strategy.
And Phil Schiller gave his testimony.
Only part of it. He'll be back on the stand on Friday.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Well, just same stuff he did last year. Or 2 years ago.
Yeah. I'm expecting a lot of what happens to seem like a rerun. There will be some new things, but a lot of this is going to go just like it did before.
Especially from Apple's side, because they won.
Yes, although it's always a crapshoot when you have a jury. And this time, as far as we know, there isn't anyone with any patent knowledge on the jury.
Ooh, the IBM executive.
Oh, okay, you're right.
There's a former IBM executive, and IBM, of course, has a long track record of protecting its own patents. Kind of surprised that they were able that Samsung didn't object to that guy being on the jury.
That's kind of surprising now that you mention it, yeah.
So I'm not sure what his role. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't expect to see a lot of new stuff. Apple has already proven that, you know, they have already successfully shown that Samsung deliberately copied Apple's technologies. And Apple's, you know, they've already shown it. So they're going to go through the same process. And I think Samsung is going to try to deflect everything onto Google's shoulders. But I don't see that as a winning strategy.
I don't see it as a winning strategy either. A big feather in Apple's cap or a big weapon in their arsenal is the fact that they do have the previous trial where they can say, look, we've already shown once how much Samsung is copying us.
Right. Yeah. It'll be, can they introduce that?
Sure.
Because the other convicted infringement, convicted isn't the right word, but the other, patent infringement that has been proved does not necessarily mean that the new patents infringe too.
No, but it does show a track record of infringement.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Of course, Samsung will attempt to keep Apple from presenting this information in court.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes.
Right. Right. There you go. Apple v. Samsung. Apple v. Samsung. You know, Samsung, all you have to do is stop copying. That's all you have to do. Stop copying and the litigation goes away.
Yeah, there you go. Well, of course, Apple is still suing Samsung. So
No, Apple would stop. I do not think that Apple would be suing if Samsung wasn't infringing.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, you know, Apple's detractors like to say that Apple, you know, Apple is suing because they can't win in the marketplace. But the reality is that all Apple wants is for people to invent their own stuff.
That's true.
Tim Cook said that. Steve Jobs said that. They've been pretty consistent on this. Invent your own stuff, and then we'll compete in the marketplace. It just drives me bananas that the Apple haters out there turn the situation of a copycat like Samsung into somehow the true innovators, where Apple is not the innovator. It just drives me nuts. It's just so completely illogical and devoid of anything close to reality. Drives me bananas.
But if you're a big fan of whatever it is, then you're more likely to just take that side.
True. I'm not saying you're accusing me of doing that myself, but my position on this is extremely well considered and based on as much exposure to the facts as I can possibly have.
Yes, and where I was going with that is that it's the hardcore Samsung fans or the hardcore anti-Apple people.
Yeah, the Apple haters.
The Apple haters that are saying that Apple is the bad guy in this case.
Yeah. Yeah, that Apple can't innovate. It's really weird. Really, 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 really weird. And I think that Phil Schiller actually spoke to that. He said that that after risking the company on the iPhone and innovating, that Samsung's ability to just copy Apple's innovations has led to a situation where people question Apple's role as an innovator. In other words, essentially what we were just talking about. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I suspect that Samsung is going to lose this case. I don't think that Apple's going to get the $40 per device that they're asking for. But the money's not important in the first place. What is important is trying to get Samsung to quit copying.
That seems like a reasonable request. Yeah.
So, on that note, I guess let's move on to Amazon TV, which happened today, right?
Yes, that happened this morning. So, in that event, Amazon announced that they are jumping into the set-top streaming media market. So that puts them in competition with Apple TV, Google Chromecast, and Roku. And so they have a new product called Fire TV. $99 lets you stream content from Hulu Plus and from Netflix and a lot of the popular streaming music services. It supports Plex. Yeah. And it also supports the Amazon Instant Video content that you get as part of Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a pretty...
You mentioned Netflix,
yes,
right?
I mentioned Netflix. It has a quad-core processor, 2 gigabytes of RAM, and supports 5.1 digital Dolby surround sound, has HDMI and optical audio out, And it looks similar in size to an Apple TV. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, oh, by the way, I forgot. Games. Supports games. Mm. So I'm looking at everything this does for $99, and I'm thinking, okay, it's time for Apple to step up its game. Because if you haven't purchased either an Apple TV or a Fire TV yet, and you're trying to decide what it is that you want, unless you are seriously locked in to iTunes, I think your $99 seems like a better investment on Amazon Fire TV.
Interesting.
Yeah, the searching on it is interesting because the remote has a microphone in it, so you can issue voice commands to your Fire TV. And it does this predictive thing where it figures out what it is that you're most likely to want to watch next. And then, excuse me, and then it cues that up and buffers it for you so that you don't have to wait for a show to start. You just jump right in. Yeah.
Interesting. So it looks like, Chromecast to me has always been kind of a half-assed joke. It works and that's fine, but it works. It seems like this is definitely stepping up the game and surpassing both Chromecast and possibly Apple TV in many ways.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely better than what Google's offering, I think. And this gives Apple TV a run for its money. Apple needs to come out with a new box or a serious software upgrade that gives it the types of features that you can get on Fire TV right now. One of those big things would be gaming.
Yeah, opening up the Apple TV to the App Store would be a grand thing.
Yes, yes. And right now, I'm thinking, okay, should I go buy an Amazon Fire TV so that I can use it and learn about it? Or do I just hold out and keep waiting to see what happens with Apple TV? Now, the reality is I am very locked into the iTunes store.
Well, yeah, if we were made of money, we'd just go ahead and get the Amazon TV product also.
Right.
Just to be able to do side-by-side stuff. And I don't know, maybe we'll just have to make that happen.
Yeah, maybe we will. It does second screen stuff also. So you can be watching a TV show or a movie, and then on your Kindle tablet, you can see additional content related to whatever it is that you're watching. So you can get behind-the-scenes information, trivia,
sure,
stuff like that. And for a lot of people, that's a very compelling feature.
It is, yeah, especially to the millennials who have to be doing multiple things at one time.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm talking about you, Ainsley, Sierra.
Man, why do they look so put out?
I don't know. It could be, I don't know. Did you feed them?
Oh, that was my week?
Yeah, this is your week to feed them.
Huh.
That would explain the pouting.
That would explain the pouting. All right, I have to take care of something right after the show.
Yeah, but not until the show's over.
No, priorities, Brian.
Yeah, so the question is, of course, Apple is, I still am convinced that Apple is going to make its TV play. And that they've been adding features to Apple TV for a while, but I think at this point now they're going to have to step up the hardware a little bit too.
Yeah, the 512 meg of RAM that's in the Apple TV currently is probably going to hold it back performance wise.
Yep.
Which tells me that when Apple does update Apple TV next, that I'm just going to have to buy a new one.
Yeah, likewise. Actually, I don't have one right now. The only one I have is the original Apple TV, and it's not even hooked up because.
You know, the original Apple TV I loved, and when the new model came out, I resisted it for quite a while because I thought, well, I don't have my hard drive in it, and I'm not going to be happy. And then when I realized I really wanted to do Netflix streaming, I was like, all right, I'll buy it. And
yeah, for streaming, the new Apple TV is great. I really think that something like Apple TV is best used in conjunction with something like a Drobo unit, where you can go ahead and store all, you know, your vast movie library and have it be accessible anywhere also.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And yeah, I found that once I really started using the hockey puck style Apple TV,
mm-hmm.
that I didn't have a use anymore for the original model.
Sure.
Yeah. But you're right. Having a media server somewhere so that you can get your content wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's totally the thing. And I would love to see Apple do a version of Apple TV that also acted as a network attached storage media server. I would just love that.
Yes. Yeah, that would be awesome. I would like that too. I don't think they're going to though.
I would love for you to be wrong in this case, but I fear you are right.
Yeah, both of us know where
that are. Yeah, I would buy the crap out of that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but Apple, you know, Apple's major investment in the cloud, I think Apple is looking firmly towards the future where cloud storage makes sense for more and more stuff all the time. And that's where their eyes are set, and they're not interested in fulfilling the need to have stuff local.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, no Apple Media Server.
Nope. How about that Windows Media Center PC, though? That ended up taking over the world, didn't it?
Yeah. I don't know how we've been able to get by throughout the history of humanity without that in everyone's home. Oh, wait. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. So it's been an interesting week. It's going to be fun following the trial. It's going to be really interesting to see how Apple responds to... Actually, Apple doesn't really respond, but to see Apple's next step in the wake of the Amazon Fire... Is that what it's called? Just Amazon Fire?
Fire TV.
Amazon Fire TV.
Yes.
Is the name of the box. Mm-hmm. All right. So it's going to be interesting to see Apple's... next step in the wake of the release of that thing. And of course, Macworld was tons of fun. And for all the people that we met, by the way, we met some listeners at the show, and it was really, really cool. Thank you for listening, and thanks for saying hi when you saw us. We really, really, really appreciate your support and the fact that you let us into your lives.
Yes. And it was great getting to run into people and just chit-chat on the expo floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was just. I mean, it was a good week.
It really was.
It was a good week, and of course, we just sort of blissfully or blithely ignored the fact that we didn't do a show last week because of Macworld.
Sure, we did. It's the lost episode.
we just didn't have time.
No.
We just did not have time last week because of the show. But anyway, we're back this week. Thank you for everybody and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think this is a good time to cut it.
I'm thinking so. All right. That's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamut both places. Also, head on over to the iTunes store and rate our show for us, because it's warm and fuzzy. We love that.
Yeah, we do. You can follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y. You can find me at geektales.com, and you can find Jeff at freshbrewedtales.com. You know, I just realized that we have tells and tales. And, but I just now really, can you believe I just now realized? Huh.
And I didn't realize it until you pointed it out.
Huh. Yeah. Anyway, Jeff is at freshbrewedtales.com and I am at geektells.com. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, and we're sponsored by the good folks at, oh, golly, what's the ADD drug?
Do you need some Ritalin, Brian?
Ritalin, thank you. Yes, we're apparently sponsored. Maybe we need to be sponsored by the good people that make Ritalin. Goodness, off the rails. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
Remember, enunciation is always important, especially for Brian, just like Ritalin. And stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the squirrel.
I shouldn't laugh. I only encourage you.